Radio, produced at Epic Gardens for broadcast on WRIR-LP 97.3 FM and worldwide at WRIR.org. It's available for podcast a few days after initial broadcast, which in this case will be Wednesday, 12-12-12 at 12 noon. We're exploring our food system, which includes everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. Energy to power our economy is on the front burner of our Commonwealth's food system. There's been a moratorium on uranium mining since 1982. Legislation to lift that ban may well come before the General Assembly in the upcoming session. With that in mind, there have been numerous opportunities to learn about the possible dangers and benefits. The Uranium Working Group called a meeting in late November of 2012 to inform the public about the group's findings. What they did was suggest that regulations be developed that would govern the activity. The issue for many of those concerned is that this would circumvent the legislative process by eliminating the need for an up or down vote, which many legislators are not prepared for nor willing to make, as this is quite a divisive issue. It was hard to find anyone who supports lifting the ban on uranium mining who would talk with the media. So listen carefully, as there is background noise and the marble halls are resonant. You will hear two voices. One is Sandy Liddy Bourne, a lobbyist who works for a think tank called the American Energy Freedom Center, which supports uranium mining, oil drilling, and any form of American-made energy. Her comments were recorded at the Science Museum of Virginia before the Governor's Uranium Mining Group public hearing. The other voice is that of the volunteer executive and legislative advisor to the Roanoke River Basin Association, Olga Kolotushkina. Olga is an energy lawyer with expertise in energy markets and regulations. The RRBA serves an expansive region which would be affected by such activities as uranium mining, including much of Virginia and North Carolina. The organization opposes uranium mining and milling and supports the development of renewable energy resources. Let's begin with the conversation I had with Sandy Liddy Bourne.
Hello. Excuse me. I'm with an independent radio station here in town, and I was hoping to get some words of wisdom from people who are on both sides of the issue, and I'm having a hard time.
Which station are you from?
Richmond Independent Radio, WRIR.
Okay.
Yeah, and everyone's so busy, and I know a lot of y'all have come a long distance, but I was hoping just to have someone who can speak to the issue of why we would buy uranium in Virginia.
Sandy, do you want to talk?
Thank you so much. Would you just tell me your name and what county you're from?
Sandy Liddy Bourne from Fairfax County. I'm with the American Energy Freedom Center.
Energy Freedom Center. And what is the center?
It's a small think tank. We look at all energy policy across the country.
Mm-hmm.
State, local energy policies, nuclear power is a major component of our comprehensive energy portfolio across the country. So we're here to comment on the lifting of the ban in Virginia.
Now, where are we getting uranium from now for our power plants?
We now import 90% of our uranium from around the world. A lot comes from, about 18% comes from Canada. About 33% comes from Russia, and the remainder comes from Kazakhstan and Namibia, Nigeria, other places that have governments that are not necessarily friendly to U.S. policies. Mm-hmm. So when you're importing that much into the country, there is a vulnerability of supply.
Mm-hmm.
And our electricity demand, just based alone on our population growth, is going to be going up steadily over the next 40 years.
Well, it sounds like you're in a unique position to answer this question that's running around in my head. There is, like, just recently we had this superstorm that wiped out the grid for the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not working toward a less centralized grid and more decentralized, like more solar power operated by individuals and towns?
Great question. A lot of our energy is in a command and control structure across the infrastructure. We have some companies, utilities, from a variety of sources. And so to answer your question, we should have a full plate of a variety of supply and fuels. You want to have a redundancy in services to ensure that you have reliability of service. Hurricane Sandy is a perfect example of a 100-year storm that could come through and hit the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's about the average of these things. You see a big hurricane and it comes through. If we don't have enough redundancy in our system, we lose power on the grid. An example of that would have been the New England blackout that occurred back in the 2000s, where New England lost a great large portion of their power.
And why did that?
Started because they didn't trim the trees enough around the power lines.
And human error.
Yeah, it was a human error, mm-hmm. and the lack of maintenance for these large transmission lines, and it started a shortage, which began mm-hmm. to affect the transmission across the region, and the whole thing circled and warped and warped and warped and boom, blew. So, and it takes, when you look at a variety of our power sources, whether it's coming from coal or nuclear power plants, one of the reasons why it takes us 3 days at best to get power back up is because it takes about 72 hours to get a nuclear power plant going again. You always have to have a source of a fossil fuel that is the default source of power to restart a nuclear power plant, for example. So that's why we have a mixture of coal plants, natural gas plants, and nuclear power plants.
So where's the solar and wind in this?
Solar and wind are, when you look at, they're intermittent. They're not always reliable. Mm-hmm. But in places like California, mm-hmm. where they have a steady climate most of the time, they mm-hmm. have deserts. Solar is probably a good idea mm-hmm. out there.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I just saw this article about Germany, mm-hmm. and they have a plan to become independent and decentralized in their energy sources, I think by like 2015, and they're aiming for 80%, and they have solar panels everywhere. Germany's climate, I believe, is a lot like Virginia to New York.
But they are still heavily reliant and will be heavily reliant on nuclear power, and they import that from France. Mm-hmm. They're still getting a lot of their power from other places. Mm-hmm. So the wind and the solar, by the natural basis of it, the sun does not shine 24 hours mm-hmm. a day, and we don't have battery capacity to store it yet for mm-hmm. a long period of time.
Yeah.
And with wind, there's some interesting studies going on in place right now. Where is there a way we can have, for example, wind in some sections of the Midwest United States where, you know, most wind is in areas where there's migration routes, where the birds fly, because mm-hmm. that's where the wind blows the most. But sometimes you can capture that, and you can transfer that power to a place like California or to someplace else as a sort of not a backup, but to mm-hmm. help you on the peak hours.
But on the grid still.
On the grid still. And to help you on those peak hours when demand is high.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no one silver bullet
right.
when it comes to energy policy. You need mm-hmm. to have them all. Because there are changes in the marketplace, there's changes in supply, there's changes in demand, there's natural mm-hmm. catastrophes, there's man-made catastrophes. Mm-hmm. There was a blackout in California, in the San Diego region, and down through Mexico, all the way up to the border of L.A. It was strictly from a repair mistake going on in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And so that knocked out power for 12 hours.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now the East Coast is used to power being knocked out for a few hours at a time because of our weather events here. But in mm-hmm. California, they had a huge mess. Everything went down mm-hmm. in the San Diego area. So you want to have those backup plans. You need to have the redundancy. And mm-hmm. so I'm here to support the uranium mining effort in Virginia because we could potentially provide 53% of our domestic need for uranium mm-hmm. across the country, just from Virginia alone. We could lower that 90% import rate.
Yeah. Now, I know that uranium is a commodity like coffee and oil, and so it would be traded on the world market. Why would this uranium stay in Virginia?
It mostly would stay in Virginia. No one's saying whether it will or won't.
Mm-hmm.
But you could use it in Virginia, and it would provide us with 75. You really have 4 nuclear power plants here, but we mm-hmm. also have national security assets in the Navy with our submarines and everything down in Norfolk, so we can use some of the uranium for that.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that's going on right now as well is in the 1980s, we set up an agreement with the then Soviet Union to purchase all of their old missiles. at a low price, and that's what we've been fueling our nuclear reactors with. Mm-hmm. That's 25% of that 90% that we import. Mm-hmm. That program expires this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we would be buying mined uranium from Russia when we could be at a higher price, when we could be purchasing mined uranium here in Virginia at a lower price. So again, we want reliability and we want affordability.
Great. Could I have your card? Or some kind of... tell me your name again and your email
Sandy
address.
Sandy Liddy Bourne, and you can reach me at sandy@energyfreedomcenter.org.
S-A-N-D-Y?
Yes.
You are so kind. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Prior to joining the Roanoke Coral Basin Association as their volunteer advisor, I have been researching the issues surrounding proposed uranium mining for over a year. I learned about the proposed project by accident in summer 2009 when I was reading a newsletter published by a lake organization where I and my husband own a second home. And I was immediately alarmed, but then I decided that I need to calm down and do my research. I said to myself, look, this is the United States of America, the most advanced, the most democratic country in the world. We live in the 21st century. They gotta know how to do it right, and they will do it right. And you also have to understand that I'm a mom. I have two very small children. At that time, my younger one was still in diapers. And I have two homes to maintain. I'm gainfully employed full-time in the energy field in Washington, D.C. So I really did not want to have this extra project, extra commitment in my life fighting a proposed uranium facility just because. I wanted to continue on with my comfortable life. But unfortunately, the more I researched, the more I read about the past and present of the uranium mining industry in this country, as well as throughout the world, it got scarier and scarier, and I got more and more concerned. And my concerns now are as strong as ever, and especially after the release of the governor's uranium working group report, because it is pretty clear that the bureaucrats here have no idea what they're dealing with. And how serious the health impacts of uranium operations can be. And that just writing regulations without looking into and without knowing whether these regulations worked in other places and without any evidence that these regulations will work in Virginia's wet climate is simply not enough to protect the public health and welfare. The uranium mining proponents' energy independence argument is based on two wrong assumptions. The first one, they just wrongly assume that all of the uranium that Virginia Uranium claims is down there underneath the Coles Hill site will be immediately available to fuel the United States nuclear power plants as soon as the uranium ban is lifted. Let's just assume, arguendo, that the General Assembly lifts the uranium ban during the 2013 legislative session. After that, it would take years for the regulatory and permitting process, and the number that I've seen is 10 years. And you can rest assured that considering the local opposition to the project and the major concerns of the state of North Carolina about having a radioactive waste site in the watershed that provides water to many counties down there and supports a very successful recreation and tourism industry, they will be building roadblocks at each step of the way during that permitting and regulatory process. But let's say in 10 years, Virginia Uranium is able to get the project permitted. After that, they will need to raise a lot of money to build mine and mill. And their ability to raise funds for this project will heavily depend on the price of uranium on global markets. Uranium is a commodity traded on global markets. And it's the global market forces that determine the price of uranium and therefore determine whether or not the Coal Shield project is attractive to global investors. But even if the operations start, Virginia Uranium may not be able to continue it to extract all the uranium that they believe is down there. Because, again, the ability to continue the operations will depend on the global prices on uranium. For example, currently there are four conventional uranium mills in the United States. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, three of these uranium mills have been on standby for years and years. That allowed the operators of those mills to suspend operations without incurring the cost of reclamation and cleanup. So when that happens, all the jobs and all of the tax benefits go out of the window. The uranium operators, of course, lay off staff and workers, and they stop paying taxes because they don't produce and sell any uranium. Another issue is that at this point, we don't know how much of uranium is really down there underneath the Coal Hill site. Back in the 1980s, when Marline Corporation did extensive exploration of the site, and they completed a lot of feasibility studies. These are the complex, lengthy studies that actually determine how much uranium can be extracted and processed economically. That those studies concluded that only 30 million pounds of uranium can be produced over 20-30-year span. Virginia Uranium, in its recent preliminary economic assessment that was released in September 2012 and was filed with the Canadian Securities Administrator, it was never released again on the American soil, not available to the U.S. public, only through visiting the Canadian website. That preliminary economic assessment concluded that Virginia Uranium will be able to produce a little bit over 60 million pounds over a 30 to 35 year span. So not all the uranium that Virginia Uranium claims is down there will become available as soon as the uranium ban is lifted. And why does it matter? It matters because this country has an aging fleet of nuclear power reactors. And there's been really no effort to replace any of those aging reactors. And in fact, because the nuclear power plants are very, very expensive, they require a lot of subsidies. And we're talking about multi-billion subsidies per project. And they have to come both from the federal government and at the state level from the ratepayers. So in order to build a nuclear reactor in the current climate, at current prices, one has to have a loan guarantee from the federal government and also the state's permission to start charging the ratepayers for that future nuclear reactor even before the construction starts. And that is not happening really nationwide. So in 40, 45 years, when that 60 million pounds of uranium, under the best case scenario, becomes really available from the Coal Hill site, we may not have nuclear reactors to use that uranium. So we are really talking about long term with a lot of uncertainties. And we are exposing Virginia to global market forces instead of really investing in sustainable local options, such as agriculture, homegrown technology, not a dirty industry, but real technological innovations, and of course, tourism, historic preservation. We can be more creative than just bringing a dirty, uncertain mineral mining extraction business to Virginia.
Extinction level events have taken place that jeopardize the future of the planet and the race. They up there around in space because they know that in a minute that's gonna be the only place to go. So every time thunderclaps, man, I wonder if some of this wild weather we having is man-made, huh? Seen a storm called Katrina come along and turn New Orleans into Atlantis for a week. Just a little peek into the possibilities. Mother Nature has abilities beyond our control. But I know the only way to make it through the pain, so I wander outside in the rain. Now listen. The earth is alive and the will to survive maintains in my brain as I wander in the rain. Strong in my brain as I wander in the rain. I hear nature calling, the rainforest falling. Industry's effect on the earth is appalling. Oxygen levels free falling at a rate even faster than the rise of the climate. Looks like the future's getting grim for the primates. Who let their heads get ahead of them? But it's all good, we about to get rid of them. Sun, moon, and stars too exact to be sweating them. The universe ain't letting them. No more, baby, no more. To survive maintains in my brain as I wander in the rain. Strong in my brain as I wander in the rain. The earth keeps spinning, the clock's still ticking. They keep pumping roids and the cows and the chickens that make puberty a pre-existing condition. Yet it's all we can afford, so we buy it. They're quiet about oxygen bars, trips to Mars, flying cars, whatever it takes to find a different place to make a haven for waste. We really don't know. We could actually be sitting at the base of the food chain on the new earth. The architects counting on division from birth. The idea is everybody has the same worth, so actually it really doesn't matter who's first. You dig me?
The second assumption of the energy independence argument is also wrong. The proponents wrongly assume that the uranium produced at the Coleshill site will be used in the American nuclear power reactors. And this is not correct. As I mentioned before, uranium is a commodity traded on global markets. And the U.S. utilities that own and operate nuclear power plants buy the uranium from the suppliers that offer the most competitive prices. Sometimes utilities form so-called buy consortiums so that they can get better deals. So whether or not U.S. utilities will be interested in Virginia Uranium's product will depend on whether or not their prices are competitive. And I think Virginia Uranium will have a very hard time competing against Canada and Australia. For example, in Canada, the average ore grade reaches sometimes 17%, while here in at the Coleshill site, the average grade is around 0.06%. And you understand that the grade difference impacts the cost of extraction. Then the in-situ leach uranium mining that is prevalent in the west of the United States has very low extraction costs, unlike conventional uranium mining. So really, Virginia Uranium will face tough competition when it comes down to extraction costs. And needless to say that U.S. utilities have well-established business contacts, nice lucrative long-term contracts for uranium supply, and Virginia Uranium will be a newcomer with possibly higher prices on that arena. I don't know if you've seen an article that is 2 or 3 months old in Virginian Pilot where they interviewed the Virginia Dominion officials to find out if the Dominion is actually counting on the uranium supply from the coal seal site. And the answer was very explicit: no. We have our long-term suppliers, and we're happy where we are. So all of these arguments are really not valid. So that uranium can end up anywhere. And our prediction is that it's probably going to China, because China is the only country that is currently still pursuing, not at the scale that they claimed they would, but they're still pursuing somewhat their nuclear power plant development. Also, some of the Middle Eastern countries are very interested in building nuclear power plants, and specifically Saudi Arabia. So these are the two countries, Saudi Arabia and China, where Virginia uranium may end up, while we will be left with the huge bill to pay for storage and monitoring of at least 29 million tons of radioactive waste just in one site forever. I just want to emphasize that we would have to store and monitor and contain and make sure nothing happens to that radioactive waste forever and ever.
Lightly on the Ground Radio is produced for WRIR Richmond Independent Radio. I want to thank Sandy Liddy Bourne and Olga Kolotushkina for sharing their time and their words with us. Befriend us on Facebook so you will know what subjects will be broached, who will be on the show, and when podcasts become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and I'm sorry, but in this case, we don't know who created the incidental music, but it is apropos. The show was hosted and produced by Sunny Gardner to keep you abreast of current happenings that may well affect you. Our legislators say they want to hear our concerns. We'll see you back here on the radio soon. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground.